Ever notice how some mornings you wake up feeling small, as if the world has shrunk overnight? Your to-do list looms like a mountain, your mistakes replay on loop, and even breathing feels effortful. Then other days, you step outside and the air itself seems to shimmer with possibility. Same life, different lens. This oscillation between feeling trapped and feeling free isn't a flaw in your character. It's the fundamental rhythm of being human. Understanding this dance transforms everything. Think of your mind as having two territories. In one, you're huddled in a cramped room with the curtains drawn, replaying every embarrassing moment from seventh grade onward. In the other, you're standing in an open field under an enormous sky, able to breathe fully for the first time in weeks. Neuroscientist Judson Brewer discovered something fascinating. When we experience guilt, craving, or anxiety, a specific brain region lights up, the posterior cingulate cortex, correlating with that claustrophobic feeling of closing down. This movement from contraction to expansion isn't a one-time achievement, but a practice, like learning to recognize when you're holding your breath and choosing to exhale. At a Zen retreat, Zainab Salbi arrived determined to avoid looking inward by fixing everyone else's problems. But silence dismantles defenses. By day two, she noticed the stories running her life: shame about not being successful enough, terror of judgment, exhausting comparisons. The breakthrough came when she realized these weren't truths, but attachments, chains around our necks. She'd been so busy being who she thought she should be that she'd forgotten to ask who she actually was. When the Buddha taught 2,600 years ago in rigidly hierarchical India, he made a radical claim: your worth isn't determined by birth, gender, or social position, but by your intentions and actions. This nullified an entire social structure built on predetermined categories. The message remains revolutionary. You're not stuck being who others decided you should be. We all want happiness, but we keep looking in the wrong places, like searching for your phone while talking on it. Buddhism identifies three culprits that keep us trapped: grasping, aversion, and delusion. These aren't abstract concepts, but lived experiences that show up daily. Grasping manifests as the feeling that you never have enough and you are never enough. Scrolling social media at midnight, eating when you're not hungry, or buying things you don't need. As Rabindranath Tagore wrote, "Set the bird's wings with gold and it will never again soar in the sky." The very things we think will complete us often weigh us down. For those struggling with addiction, urge surfing offers a powerful practice. Pause before reaching for the substance or behavior and ask, what does this actually feel like in my body? Often, beneath the surface craving lies a deeper need for connection or relief. Aversion is grasping's twin, showing up as anxiety, resentment, and obsessive focus on what's wrong. One crucial distinction: remorse says, I made a mistake and I can learn from it. Shame says, I am a mistake. Remorse opens doors, shame nails them shut. Delusion is perhaps the sneakiest hindrance because it masquerades as protection, spacing out during difficult conversations, clinging to beliefs despite contradictory evidence, or numbing yourself to avoid pain. These three patterns work together to keep us trapped in contraction, convinced that freedom lies somewhere else. Kate Braestrup, a chaplain for search and rescue workers, once told a terrified mother whose child was missing, "I'm not here to keep you from freaking out. I'm here to be with you while you freak out." This is emotional maturity, not eliminating difficult feelings, but learning to hold them differently. Tsokni Rinpoche's handshake practice teaches us to meet our beautiful monsters by softening into the experience, staying grounded, being present without demanding change, and listening with genuine curiosity. Dan Siegel describes our window of tolerance, the optimal zone where we feel emotions without being overwhelmed or shutting down. Outside this window, we spike into hyperarousal, panic, racing thoughts, or drop into hypoarousal, numbness, disconnection. The RAIN technique offers a roadmap: recognize and name what you're feeling, allow the emotion without fixing it, investigate where you feel it in your body, and either non-identify by remembering this is part of being human, or nurture yourself with kindness. When you widen your window of tolerance, you can feel afraid while still loving yourself, experience anger without suppression or consumption, and sit with intense pain without believing you're alone. Stephen Colbert and Anderson Cooper, both having lost loved ones young, understand this. Colbert sees suffering as allowing us to love more deeply and to understand what it is like to be a human being. As psychiatrist Mark Epstein notes, if we push the mourning, the grief, the sadness away, we are also pushing the love away. Your capacity for sorrow and your capacity for love are the same capacity. Resilience isn't snapping back like a rubber band. Life changes us. We must avoid two traps: toxic positivity, denying reality with empty platitudes, and being completely defined by painful circumstances. Viktor Frankl proposed tragic optimism, searching for meaning amid inevitable suffering. The Buddha taught that suffering alone isn't redemptive. You might become bitter or deepen in compassion. The difference is having enough light to surround the darkness, enough space to hold pain without collapsing into it. Bonnie Pittman, a museum leader living with chronic illness since 2008, exemplifies this. Despite pain with every breath, like a thousand knives, she created her Do Something New practice, one new experience daily. Her perspective shifted from rage to acceptance. My choice is not to live in pain. My choice is to live in joy. After the Parkland shooting, survivor Samantha Novick discovered she could hold multiple emotions at once, recognizing that when we are in the depths of darkness, the light is implicit. When life gets hard, the question isn't whether you'll suffer, you will, but whether you'll let that suffering close your heart or crack it open wider. Love isn't just romantic feeling or family bonds. Bell Hooks called it transformative, that challenges us in both our private and our civic lives. An embodied knowing that recognizes your well-being and others aren't separate. Like houseplants that survive neglect but flourish with attention, we thrive through connection. Genuine connection regulates your nervous system, drops cortisol, and expands creativity. Yet love isn't self-sacrifice. In Encanto, Luisa nearly breaks under expectations, confusing responsibility with control. Real love includes boundaries, saying no, recognizing you can't pour from an empty cup. Actor Danny Burstein, after losing his wife to ALS and nearly dying from COVID, reflected that what lasts is being kind and putting goodness and love out there first. Sufi teacher Omid Safi explains radical love as covering everything generously, like snow falling indiscriminately, not because some deserve more, but because that's love's nature. There's a Pali word, tejas, meaning the luminous energy within each person. This light doesn't need earning. Freedom isn't escaping pain, but holding immense sorrow and wonder simultaneously, recognizing your heart contains multitudes. When you experience awe, watching a sunset, hearing spine-tingling music, or witnessing extraordinary kindness, your self-preoccupation diminishes. You're not worth less, you're simply part of something larger. Linda Stone discovered that breathing techniques alone couldn't achieve optimal physiological coherence. Only when combined with genuine appreciation did she reach balance. Your body knows the difference between going through motions and actually feeling grateful. Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build theory shows that positive emotions like awe expand awareness and build inner resources for difficult times, like deposits in an emotional bank account. Reverend Kathy Bristow offers a powerful practice. Throughout your day, notice good moments, enjoying a meal, receiving a smile, witnessing a baby's laughter. As you practice looking for good moments, you begin seeing what you're looking for. The yes and approach from improv theater offers a skillful alternative to forced positivity. Acknowledge difficulties while adding perspective. Yes, this situation is frustrating, and I'm grateful for the friend who listened. Both truths coexist. This daily practice isn't about perfection, but consistently choosing expansion over contraction, connection over isolation, awareness over autopilot. Loneliness feels like erasure, a painful contraction where you disappear even from yourself. Solitude, by contrast, is chosen aloneness with ease of heart. Modern society's surging loneliness stems from declining community participation, excessive individualism, and technology that promises connection while delivering isolation. Suzanne Simard's forest research reveals a stunning metaphor. Trees connect through underground fungal networks, the wood wide web, where older trees share information and resources with struggling neighbors. Sun-rich trees produce excess sugar and generously support others. Interconnection as biological fact, caring, nourishing, creating legacy. Buddhism's Indra's net captures this beautifully, an infinite net with reflective jewels at each intersection, each mirroring all others. No one exists independently. You're woven through countless relationships. When we help others, our own anxiety shifts. Pandemic examples proved this. A middle school food drive generating 30,000 kits. Shelley Tygaleski's Pandemic of Love facilitating 2 million matches and $60 million exchanged. Freedom isn't found in perfect circumstances, but in how we meet what arises. Every moment offers a choice. Contract or expand, armor or open, isolate or connect. Choose expansion. Choose connection. This is your real life.